If you got syphilis, keep your hat on so we know who's got syphilis around. Thank you. Thank you. Let us know when you're ready. It says in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, some of us tried to return to our old ways, and the result was nil. That's the topic that I'm going to try to talk to you a little bit about today. But first off, I want to read something to you that I haven't read for quite a while. And there is a videotape on this particular thing, and I hope you haven't just played it recently. But I read it for two reasons. One, to, of course, pass it on to you. And then the other reason is sort of selfish, because I use it on a rather daily basis in my own recovery program, because it meant so much to me in the beginning of my recovery. It's quite common in Alcoholics Anonymous to see people, when they get the book Alcoholics Anonymous, whether they buy it or get it as a gift or whatever, and they do manage to get around to reading it, you'll see people sometimes underscoring words, circling sentences, or making notations about paragraphs or parts of the book that appear to be a little bit more important to them than others. A popular way of doing it nowadays is with yellow felt pens. They sort of scribble through the black writing to emphasize a particular passage in the book. I've done that for many, many years because I had a lot of difficulty reading the book and understanding the book, because I can't read very well. And over the years, as a result of all of this, going back for points of reference and underscoring, my book began to fall apart, you know, and got in pretty bad shape. And so one day, about 15 years ago, I decided to have my original book, which I still had, rebound and put into a sort of a little folder-like so that it could get preserved. Not that it had any importance to anybody else in life except me. It was very important to me. And I still have that book, and I keep it in the trunk for just sentimental reasons, I guess. But the day that I was getting it ready to take down to the guy that was going to bind it for me, I was putting the pages together, I started reading some of the things that I had underscored over these 30-odd years, you know, and things that at one time or another undoubtedly seemed to be very important to me, or seemed to be something that I wanted to dwell on. And after I wrote down most of these things that I had underscored, I put them into sort of like a composition form, four little paragraphs, and I've chosen to read them at AA meetings for many years now. We read them up here at the St. Patrick's Day celebration, the Oktoberfest, and on any other particular occasions. And I want to read them to you today. And whenever I do read these, I tell the people this, you know, and I hope you can do this, and I'm not trying to be dramatic or cornball. I'm just trying to get you to feel what AA is all about, you know, that this is no joke. This isn't any social club. This isn't a bunch of do-gooders running around knocking drunks off stools and shit like this. Listen carefully to this, and if you can only imagine this, you know, maybe it'll help you to close your eyes, I don't know. Don't hear this as though it's words coming from me. Hear it with a little bit of imagination, that perhaps you have turned the clock back 49 years. And you're not sitting here in Calistoga, rather you are sitting back there in perhaps the 24th Street Clubhouse in New York City, where this book was written in its roughest form, where it was created. And the words that you're going to hear today are not my words. They're the combined voices of those original 100 men and women who were just like you and I. And that's what you're hearing today. You're hearing the voices of 100 men and women just like you, passing on to us here today what little bit of knowledge, what little bit of wisdom and hope that they had at that time. For you see, they didn't have much going for them. AA was only 2 years old in those days, so the longest period of sobriety that could have been represented in that group was represented by Bill Wilson and a few others, was 2 years. They had no abundance of literature. They didn't have a big book that they had gone back on. Any old timer would tell you when asked, you know, what kept them together, and they said blind faith, but faith in each other. And here's what they wrote. It will be obvious to you that I've updated one figure right in the first sentence, just to get it up to date. We of Alcoholics Anonymous, now this is those people talking to you, are now more than 1 million who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. We have not recovered from alcoholism. To show other people, if they choose, precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of our program. For those of you who seek recovery based on these concepts, we hope that our program can be so convincing to you that no further authentication or experimentation on your part will be necessary. We are quite sure that the personal accounts of our own experiences, both good and bad, might perhaps be an integral part of your acceptance to the truth and the wisdom of this program. For surely, at this time in our lives, there is no need for us to impress you with fabricated falsehoods. This is a time for complete honesty with others. For most normal people, drinking has meant conviviality, companionship, and sometimes a very colorful imagination. For others, it has meant release from care, boredom, and worry. Others found it as a joyous intimacy with friends and a strong feeling that life was good. It was not so with us. During the latter days of our drinking, when the ability to control that drinking was apparently beginning to disappear, the pleasure was gone. Despite countless vain attempts on our part, never could we seem to regain that control which would enable us to recapture once more the great moments of the past. For men and women like us, there was always one more attempt at trying to enjoy and control our drinking, and inevitably, always one more failure. Now, I repeat, those words were written by alcoholics for alcoholics. And if you're an alcoholic as I'm an alcoholic, you might be saying right now the very same thing that I said, you know, when I read them words. I thought they had written that book about me. I thought they had gone to my wife and gotten all of the information about me, because I thought every word in that book was directed towards me, because I certainly fitted into the pattern. Alcoholics Anonymous. Some of you are going to accept AA and some of you are going to reject it. Some of you have rejected it. Some of you have tried over the years to make a joke of it. And the only joke you've made of it is yourself. And there'll be one or two of you in here that will grasp onto this new way of life and be part of the miracle of recovery. You know, when you're in a facility like this, there's two very important things that you have to keep in mind. And one of them is, don't listen to the bullshit in here from the losers, from the people who have been in and out of here on numerous occasions. They've got nothing to offer you but a bunch of garbage. And the other important thing for you to do is to listen to the things that the people who haven't had to come back here have to tell you. They're referred to in Alcoholics Anonymous as the winners. One of the commonest things that happens in a facility like this, or any facility like this, is that a new person can come in here, never been into any kind of a treatment program before in their life, virgin to this kind of activity. And then in a matter of 2 days, they find out that 75% of the people who are here have been here before, have been in other treatment type facilities, have been fighting this supposed battle for 10 years, 20 years. And this could cause someone to really go on a hell of a downer. You know, they could sit there and figure, my God, you know, is this what I'm in for? Do I have to come back to these places 10, 15, 20 times? Do I have to wind up an idiot like some of these people I see parading around these places? So schizo that they think there are a million different roles and... is that what's in store for me? Well, there's no way we could do anything about that. As a matter of fact, I wouldn't want to change it because I think it's good therapy for you to see that. But on the other hand, I don't want you to be discouraged because what you see, which is representative in any of these facilities by repetitiveness, is only a small core of a group. A little over 20,000 people have been through this facility since 1967. And in that 20,000, I'd say we have a core group of about 750 who, for reasons perhaps known only to them, exhibit strong difficulty in accepting this new way of life or enveloping this new way of life. And they repeatedly come back to these kind of places. They're referred to sort of compassionately in the trade as tourists. Tourists. We call them tourists, you know. Sometimes people say, well, how many times are you going to let a guy come back? Well, that's tough. I'll tell you, we have a job opening here. And it's available for any of you who want it. And that job is that you have to sit here in judgment and decide who's had their last chance. Now, who wants their job? Who wants to be the one to say, no, don't take him, he's been here too many times? You know, if they had done that with me, I'd probably be dead now. Because I was 6 years making a complete farce out of this program, and they always kept them doors open, you know. The job I had, of course, was getting to them. Now, on the other hand, if you don't want to see people who have been here so many times, come along with me tomorrow night. Come along with me every Thursday next month to Concord. Come along with me every Wednesday night, the month after that in Fremont. Come along with me over to Menlo Park every Tuesday night in June, or every Thursday night in August to Marin, or every Friday night in July to San Jose, or wherever we go now, because we start this week, you know, what we call series talks. I go out to the areas that I've just mentioned, and I do 4 or 5 consecutive weekly meetings in those particular areas, like every Tuesday night or every Thursday night. I'm not trying to sell you a bill of goods. I'm not trying to be braggadocious. I'm not trying to impress you. I'm just laying it out for you in simple language. If you want to see the results of sitting around tables like this, If you want to see the results of people who accepted the truth and the wisdom that they heard around tables like this, if you want to see the people who went out and did what they were suggested to do when they left this, then I suggest you come along with me. And I'm not talking about a group of 50 people. I'm not talking about a group of 100 people. And I'm not talking about groups of 200 people, 300 or 400. I'm talking about groups ranging anywhere from 600 to over 1,000 in San Jose, of people who sat at these tables. The majority of them sat at these tables and have never had to come back again. Never had to come back again. Tomorrow night they celebrate the 18th anniversary, I believe it is, of our alumni group in San Francisco. It's up on top of that Diamond Heights now. I know damn well they won't get no 600 there. I don't think that church can hold 400. But there'll be about 900 try to get in. I know that because that's how it was last year and the year before and the year before that. So don't sit in a room like this letting any of these negative assholes in here try to sell you a bill of goods that this program don't work. And you can tell them the greatest Latin quote of all as they expound to you. You're full of shit. Because it's exactly as this book says, if you want what we have, then certainly here for the asking. That's all it is. If you want it. If you don't want it, to hell with it then. Go on about your own business. We don't condemn you for that. We even take our hats off as it says in the book to you. Maybe you haven't read that far. It says, if you can do the right about face and drink like a gentleman, our hats are off to you. Heaven knows we ourselves have tried hard enough and long enough. But we fail. So remember now, when you hear that negative kind of talk in here, that consider the source. You're looking at somebody or listening to somebody who went out there and thought they could drink again, and they lost. Again. And you can take a lesson from them people. Now you're going to hear other people say, well, hell, I've been around this damn program for 18 years and I'm still drunk. And that's probably the truest statement you could ever make. You have been around this program. Around don't work. In works. In this program works. You know, if you're outside freezing to death, you don't get warm until you come in the building. You can't get warm just staying around the building. You've got to get in the building. I always tell a sort of a silly little, jerky little tale of how this is really portrayed, you know, sort of in a silly way, but it gets the point across of the difference between being around AA or being in AA. I guess you're all familiar with how the West was settled. Cowboys and them wagon trains came out here and done all of that tough shit years ago. Well, they probably invented that in and around, didn't know it. Because think how those big wagon train deals used to start, you know. Usually they were started by a bunch of people who were getting run out of some town back east, you know. Back around Chillicothe, Ohio, or some asshole place like that. People said, well, y'all gotta get out of town, get the hell out of here, you know. So they hung around the saloon talking it over, you know, where the hell to go? They're getting run out of Chillicothe. All of a sudden somebody said, let's go to California. Streets are paved with gold, California. So they all got excited about going to California. And then all of a sudden somebody said, anybody know how to get there? Nobody knew how to get there. So they decided they wanted to go, but they needed somebody to take them. So they looked up in the yellow pages. Said, wagon trains. Train's wagon. Ward Bond. He had a big ad in there, so they figured he was the best. Bond Ward. So they got a hold of old Ward. Ward came down to the saloon that night and talked it over with him. Said, all right, I'll take you all out there. Here's the rules. He laid down all of the rules. He said, I want you to know something else. I run the wagon train. What I say goes. No questions, no comments from anybody else. Fair enough? Hey, they all agreed, you know. So what's this fine? Be down here Monday morning, 7 o'clock, ready to go. Have all your gear with you, get your wagons loaded, and whatever livestock you're taking, and be prepared for a long, tough journey. And Monday morning, there they all were, down in the village square, big old wagons, you know, and oxens, and all sorts of pots and pans and shit hanging around, you know, and just a big old mess, you know, and all anxious to go, you know, and Ward running up and down his goddamn horse, you know, looking things over, and pretty soon he decided, you know, that it was okay to go. He had old Frankie Lane with him, you know, and Frankie Lane gave him about 3 choruses of Mule Train, you know. And then somebody hollered out, oh, Jesus Christ, you know. It's like Ella Fitzgerald breaking one of them Memorex tapes, you know. And off they went, out of town, clippity-clop, clippity-clop, clippity-clop. All the wagons in a big line, clip-clop, clip-clop. They went out of Ohio and went into Indiana and crossed through past Notre Dame and went over there and saw the game and went through Illinois and had some corn in Iowa. Went on up through Nebraska and Nebraska into Wyoming and Wyoming over into Utah. And boy, pretty soon they got to Nevada, man. Clippity-clop, clippity-clop. I mean, through the rain and sleet and all of that kind of crap. Man, it was tough. And they got to Nevada, up around Winnemucca someplace, I guess. And old Ward was out in front. He went, oh! Like that. Everything stopped. Man, he got everybody up in front. He said, I'll tell you what. He said, so far the trip's been all right. But there's some badasses out here in Nevada. So we got to be careful. Because these badasses, you know, come after us. So tonight when we camp, I'll tell you what I want you to do. I want you to bring all of the wagons into a big circle. And just make this big circle. And then everybody that wants to be safe, get inside of the circle. So, geez, they put this big circle around there, clippity-clop, clippity-clop, and playing their banjos and things, you know, and singing Oh, Susanna. And then they got the circle made, and everybody got inside of the circle. And dusk came to the desert. The whippoorwills whippled. The antelope played. The purple sage, you know, and all of that Zane Grey shit, you know. And it looked like a Hallmark greeting card. Then all of a sudden, in the darkness, somebody lit up a cigarette, and you could see it for 7 miles. And Ward hollered out, put out that goddamn cigarette, you can see it for 7 miles. Somebody hollered back, screw you, Ward, I want to smoke. Ward says, if you want to smoke, get the hell out of here. So the guy picked up his bedroll, got his saddle, got outside the circle, and went down the road about 300 yards and fixed himself up a little camp and lit up a joint and said, fuck you, Ward. And then night came back to the desert, and whippoorwills. The purple sage. Ooh, home on the range. And then all of a sudden somebody started playing a banjo. And Ward hollered out, "Knock off that goddamn banjo, you gotta hear it for a mile."
"Screw you, Ward. Out!"
And out he went. "And that goes to you two over there. None of that crap here. You two get out of here." Down the road that couple went. And night came back to the desert. And it looked so nice and peaceful down there. Home on the range. And all of a sudden you look up on the mesa. And up there on the mesa, in their Pintos, were Sitting Bull and Cochise. And they were looking down at that Hallmark greeting card. And Sitting Bull turned to Cochise and said, "Co?" Co says, "What do you want, Bull?" "I see that friggin' Ward Bonds back out here." "Got them all in a circle, too, so we can't get them. This is going to be a bad trip for us here. We're going to go home empty-handed." Bull says, "Yeah, don't look too good." And he says, "Well, we'll stop over there, a little Bighorn, on the way back, see what's going on over there." They just about got ready to leave when all of a sudden Cochise says, "Hey, Bull." Bull says, "What, Co?" He says, "Look over there." Bull says, "Where?" "He's over there." "Oh, there." He says, "That guy's smoking." "Yeah." He says, "Jesus, look at that other one playing the banjo." "Yeah, look at them two down the road there." He says, "Well," he says, "you know, couple's better than nothing." So down off the mesa they came. 7 o'clock, 7 o'clock. And around the circle they went. Got the guy smoking. Got that couple. Got the guy with the banjo. They got all of the people that were around the circle. They didn't get none of the people that were in the circle. You certainly know the moral to that story. It's safer to be in than it was out, even when you're fucking around with Cochise. So that's the simple story that I have to tell you about the difference in being in AA and being around the AA. You know, as silly as it is, as silly as that is, it's as basic truth as you're ever going to find, because just like the people outside around it who died, I've seen so many who have said the same thing. I sponsored a dear friend of mine, you know, ex-cop from San Francisco. Some of you remember him. Johnny Long, ex-Marine, wonderful guy, very close friend of mine. And Johnny was his classic example of being around AA as you ever could find. And he paid that price. Johnny says, "Hell, I go to 5 meetings a week." And he did. He'd get to each meeting at 8:29. And he'd sneak in the back door and he'd sit in the back row. And just as soon as the speaker was finished and everybody was clapping, Johnny was out the back door. Sure, he had heard somebody talk. But he hadn't been at a meeting. You ask so many times when you're new, "What about my friends? What'll I do if I stop drinking?" You feel as though your life's going to end, that the word fun will disappear. I know it's hard for you to accept this right now, but believe me, if you possibly could, that what you think is going to end is going to begin now. Life doesn't end with sobriety, it begins with sobriety. Please try to remember that. Your friends, huh? You worried about your friends? All these people that are out there waiting to visit with you today? All these people that sent the candy and the cigarettes up to you today? I don't see a big lineup of friends out there. Hasn't been a bartender called this place in 16 years to find out how you're doing. Those are your friends. Your friends. In here you find a common bond. A common bond. That it's almost unable to discuss. It's so unbelievable. It's so unbelievable. The quality of friendship that's developed. The quality of concern for the well-being of another person that you experience in places like this. Almost total strangers concerned about how you're doing. If they can do anything for you. I've never experienced that any other place than just last February. It's the only time outside of AA that I ever experienced that. You know, I'm not saying the world is a cold and hard place, but, you know, not too many people out there are really wrapped up in what's going to happen to me and you today. Everybody here seems to be wrapped up in their own survival. And last year I had a very unique experience in February. I went back to New Zealand. And as a result of some kind of publicity in New Zealand, my picture was on the front page of the New Zealand paper. Now, I was in Auckland, which is the biggest city in New Zealand. A little over a million population. The day after, or 2 days after that picture was in the paper, I'd be walking down Queen Street, which is the market street of Auckland. And you know, there's nothing that outstanding about my face or, you know, that would make me more noticeable than anything else. But people, actual strangers, people I'd never seen in my life, were expressing that same kind of concern that I found in AA. Because they were stopping me on the street and they say, "Hey, you're the Yank who had his picture in the paper, isn't it?" I'd say, "Yeah. Can we do anything for you? Come to our house for dinner. Come here. You want to use my car?" Can you imagine walking down Market Street? One of them wackos come up to you with a sheet over his head, you know? You know, you'd have them locked up. And that happens all over this tiny little country that's no bigger than the state of California. I was way on the outskirts of town, out by a racetrack called Ellerslie Racetrack. Way in the hell out of town. It would be like being in Sonoma if you were from San Francisco. And I was standing there waiting for a bus to take me back into town. And I, unknowingly, I was standing in front of a little antique shop. I hadn't noticed it. And all of a sudden, this attractive lady came flying out of the goddamn antique shop. I said, "Aren't you the Yankees pictures in the paper?" I said, "Come on in." She wanted to give me a cup of tea. I didn't want the tea. So we shot the bull a little bit. She wanted to know what I was doing out there at the racetrack. And I told her that during the war that racetrack had been a military hospital. And I had been a patient there. And just for sentimental reasons, I had gone out there. And then we got to talking about the military. And then I told her how I painted little soldiers and how I collected little soldiers. As soon as she heard that, she got all bright, you know. And she went running over to one of them cabinets she had and opened it up, and there was a little British soldier in there, you know, about that big. Old from World War I. And she gave it to me, you know. And that's the kind of people that you meet day in and day out in AA. The same kind of genuine warmth, the same kind of concern. Sure, always scattered amongst them is a couple of assholes. You can't miss that, no matter where you go. You know, there's even assholes in heaven. And if you don't think so, ask Jesus. He found that out at the Last Supper that one guy sold him out. See? Right. He was going to waste him if he had his way. And you got to get into your head that AA is not a punishment. A lot of people come here thinking that this is sort of a penance. You're sentenced to AA, 9,000 meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and people go, oh, shit, I gotta go. My God, that's the greatest opportunity that you'll ever experience, but you won't know that until you experience it. You won't believe it until you experience it for a while. I know that. I used to think that AA was nothing but a drag, and I'm going to say something now to preface another statement that I'm going to make. But I have to be careful when I say this, because actually you who are new, I'm not really ready for this kind of a statement, and certainly don't adapt your thinking to this statement, but rather hold this statement as a future reward that will come soon enough. It's about my attitude towards sobriety today. Now, not like you, I have gone a few 24 hours without taking a drink. I've paid my dues. If all that my sobriety was today, if all that it was that 5 or 6 nights a week I was running off to some church basement to drink that shitty coffee and eat them lousy cookies and listen to your bullshit over and over again, I believe I'd go back to drinking. I didn't stop drinking to spend the rest of my life in church basements eating cookies and drinking shitty coffee. I was attracted to this program because of the word life. They said a new way of life. I have been an action guy all of my life. I had no plans on spending the remaining years in church basements. I want to be out there and be part of the daily thing called living. And I wanted to do it sober. So I had to learn that there is more to AA than this. AA isn't just every night a meeting. AA is that friendship that I've just tried to talk to you about. Groups of your friends who form your own diversions, your own likes and dislikes, and pursue them. Let me tell you how that came about. I was at a meeting in Elgin, Illinois, and I'd been sober a little over a year. And I was in a group that it seemed, since we've checked this out, it wasn't true, but I thought it was, that everybody was married, except me. And when the meeting ended, everybody went like hell home. And I was always the last one there, and I had to put away the chairs, wash the goddamn cups, go sit down to the pizza place at 11:30, feeling sorry for myself, because I had nobody to go home with, you know. I was pissed off, and I was going about 9 meetings a week. There was no social life at all, hardly, in my program at that time. The closest thing that had come about, and that had only happened just about a month prior to this, oldest member of the group, a guy by the name of Ozzy Hill, came up to me one day, and he was a god to me. You know, he was Mr. AA. And he'd be the last guy that I'd want to ever find out that I wasn't going to 99 meetings a day and stuff like that, you know. And Ozzy called me up one Friday, about 6 o'clock at night, the night of a meeting. And he says, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, just washing the dishes, getting ready to go to the meeting." He says, "I'll be by to pick you up." He says, "We'll go down and watch the high school play football." Jesus Christ. I couldn't get over that. Ozzy was not going to go to a meeting? And he came by and he took me, and that began to develop a big friendship between he and I. And every Friday night, along with 2 other guys, we went to see a high school play football. That was just the beginning that maybe you could do some of these normal things. But that wasn't enough, because we all arrive at a spot in AA, and you'll arrive there, that Peggy Lee sings that song about, "Is That All There Is?" And that's just about how I was this night. Is this all there is? Is this what I'm going to do until I die? And I made mention of that at the meeting during the course of the discussion, how upset I was, that I was looking for more than just this. And nobody said anything. They didn't carry on any discussion. One of them old-timers just said some kind of silly AA shit like, "This too shall pass," you know. I wanted to hit him in the mouth, you know. But there was a couple of strangers who had walked in, you know, to the meeting, and I didn't know them. It was common. People come from other groups. And this one sort of a thin Italian-looking guy, as soon as the meeting was over, he came over to me. And he introduced himself, and he says, "What are you talking about that there's no social side of AA?" He says, "Don't you ever go to any of the roundups or anything? This is in Illinois." And I said, "What? Them workshop things?" Because that's what they used to call them, workshops. And I used to envision, you must be sick. You know, you go all goddamn week to these friggin' things, and then you go to a workshop on the weekend where they have about 10 in one day? Are you... And I said, "No, I never go to none of that stuff." And he said, "Well, that's what you're missing out." He says, "I'm on my way right now to Starved Rock Park," and that's a state park in Illinois. He says, to a roundup or whatever the hell they call it. He says, "Why don't you come along with me?" And I felt like saying, you know, "Move on, will you? I don't want none of that crap." And I said, "What the hell are you?" I said, "Don't you get enough AA during the week?" And then he began to tell me, he said, no, it's not like that. It's not like you think. And that has always been a problem with us alcoholics. We do everybody else's thinking for them, and we form opinions and believe that that's the truth. I had it all planned what a roundup at Starved Rock Park was. You would have thought I wrote the program, but it was entirely wrong. It was entirely wrong. Because this guy, he didn't have to persuade me too much. I finally said, "Well, I ain't doing anything anyhow, so what the hell?" I says, "Let's stop by my house, I'll pick up some thought articles and a clean shirt or something, let's go." And that was my first exposure to what I always choose to call the other side of AA. Now, I have to admit, in the Middle West, very conservative. The AA is very conservative in the Middle West. They don't have roundups, they don't have weekend deals as often as you do here in California. You're sitting in the hotbed of AA social activity if you're in California. I guarantee you that, because you know I travel all over the country, all over the world, and there is no place ever that has as much activity, fun type activity, as the state of California. I'm sorry to say the southern part of the state has more than the northern part, but there's still plenty in the northern part. And when I got exposed to that back there in Illinois, I grabbed on, you know. Here they were dancing, they were joking. I like to play cards, and got in with a group that played poker all night for two straight nights, you know. And other guys fooling around, people shacking up, playing house, whatever the hell they're doing, you know. Because the words kept going in my head, what they had said in the beginning. "All you do here is stop drinking. All you do here is stop drinking. We are not saints. We are not saints," you know. And I think AA displays that very well, and with a lot of class. With a lot of class. Look where you are now if you want to be part of it. We drank for fun. That's why everybody ever took a drink in their life until you become alcoholic. You drank anticipating that this would inaugurate fun. Hell, you can find all the fun in the world without drinking or without using. Try Palm Springs the first weekend in June when 4,500 members of AA assembled there for the weekend, starting on Thursday. You think I'm talking about entertainment? They're going to bring the little girls from the local dancing school out there to twirl batons? No, I'm talking about Jim Nabors or whoever, the Glenn Miller Band or whatever. Big time crap, big time stuff. Dances for everybody, the old people and the young guys. for the Alateens, for the Al-Anons, for everybody. A fun thing at a fun place. Try Monterey in the spring. When we go down to Monterey, about 4,500 of us there in the Doubletree Inn. Try any of these things. Next weekend, 2 weeks, I guess it is. What is the Spring Fling, Sacramento? I don't know, they get close to 3,000 of that at the Red Lion Inn up there in Sacramento. A fun thing. And you think this is all people sitting around talking about the steps, the tradition? And I'll tell you something that I'm not proud of this, and I'm not ashamed of it. I go to a conference, I go to a three-day deal like that, and if I go to one meeting, that's one more than I plan on going. That's right. I don't go up there to meetings. I don't think I'm going to hear anything better at a conference than I can hear right in my own local group. I go up there to renew and rekindle the fellowship, what they call arm's length AA. The fun part of it, you know. Doing whatever the hell your thing is. People shoot off into different directions, taking local scenic attractions or whatever. The most popular convention spot we got in California, of course, is Anaheim, because of its closeness to Disneyland, you know. I spoke at the one in Orlando at that Epcot Center. Fantastic deals, you know. This is AA. This is AA. AA is not all a big, long face with your jaw down to your kneecap, you know, and run around saying, poor me, poor me. Now, you don't have to come along in this ride. I call it adventure. You can stay right where you are. You can stay doing the things that you think you're doing. That's fun. That's fun. Oh, sure, somebody said, how the hell can you afford to go to all the places? I can afford to go to them places easy. Because I ain't paying $5.75 a week, five, six, seven times a year to get sober. That's why I can go to them. The same reason you could go to them. Some of you have spent enough money here in this place to go around the world five times. And that's the truth. That's the truth. And yet when I'll say, well, why don't you go over to Hawaii there in November for the convention? Over there for a week, $580 for a week. I can't afford that. 2 days later, you're in here drunk, giving me $1,100. That's it. Laugh at yourself because you're the biggest joke. You're the joke that I talked about. And then you say, life is a drag. That's why I drink. Life is a drag. And it doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to be that way. You don't have to become celibate when you join AA. You don't have to stop gambling. You don't have to stop betting on horses. I still cheat at cards. Don't play cards with me. That's right. If I can look in your hand, I'll look in your hand. Well, last time we went there, I forget where it was, Stockton. Guy put a marked deck in there in a card game. Can you imagine that? An AA guy. And I made him take it out when we finished playing, because I played right along with it. It wasn't my deck, you know. Once I spotted it was marked, I knew what to do. I was just as big a crook as he is. So live. Give yourself a break. Jesus. You know, we have a cliche. It's a cornball cliche. But I don't know, maybe it's because I'm getting older or whatever it is, but the cornball cliches begin to make more sense to me now than they ever made. You know. And there's one that I used to detest. God, I used to detest it, you know. And it's a half part of a longer cliche, you know, and they'd say, they don't need you. You need AA. And I used to say, hey, you're number one, you know? Because I don't like that kind of talk. But then the other part of that was, if you don't like it, try it for 30 days. And if you don't like it, we'll gladly refund you your misery. And that's true. What I would suggest to any of you out there that are experiencing negativeness, any of you people that don't have balls who are just cutting this program off to hell, I challenge you, if you're so hot, I challenge you to try to live this way for 60 days. And then, like they say, if you don't like it, you can go back to where you are right now. Do you have the guts to try it, or do you still want to just sit around and put out the negative crap? The biggest sign of ignorance in Alcoholics Anonymous has always been contempt prior to investigation. And it blossoms in rooms like this. Because people who don't know a damn thing sit around expounding. Well, it's a bunch of crap, bunch of holy rollers, you know. Go down there to Monterey for a weekend and got to listen to them goddamn speakers all friggin' weekend. I listen to the speakers all weekend. You know the speakers I listen to? They're out there at the end of that dock. They go, bark, bark. It's them seals down there. I go listen to the seals. I haven't heard a speaker in Monterey in 14 years. And I'm going down there next spring, and I don't anticipate listening to one down there then either, you know. Unless it's me, of course. So give yourself a break. Grab a little bit of life. Grab a little bit of life, because it's there if you want it, if you want it. If you don't want it, that's all right, too. We're not going to chop your head off. We're not going to stop talking to you. We're not going to walk on the other side of the street from you. That's your choice. That's your choice. You choose to go that way. I choose to go another way. Are there any questions or any comments before I close this particular meeting?